Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
We're all back. I'm Morgan Nickelberg, Matt Dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, meteor victim.
Oh no, were you in Russia? Did you get struck by one or is it some other kind of meteor?
I'm sorry, did I say meteor?
Yeah.
I mean,
fashion victim, perhaps?
Okay, yep.
Yeah, there's been mixed news this week, some good and some bad. My favourite story, probably, is the story of the colossal carrot that was in the Taranaki Daily News.
How colossal does it have to be a colossal carrot?
Well, that's a really insightful question. More insightful than you might realise initially.
I mean, a colossal squid is really big compared to a normal squid.
Really
big. How big is a colossal carrot compared to a normal carrot?
Well, the story says exactly. Ian Taylor of Partia said the secret ingredient for his great big carrot, which has a length of 19 centimetres, just over half a foot, and a circumference of 38 centimetres.
That's a weirdly shaped carrot.
Which is a bit over a foot. He said that the secret was dung. Horse poo. He picks up 4 trailer loads a week, apparently.
You want to make sure you hose it off pretty well, then.
You would want to make sure of that.
Give it a good scrubbing and a peeling, mind you. That's probably the truth of anything that grows in the ground.
The thing about this colossal carrot is that it's not that big. And this was in the newspaper.
Which newspaper?
Taranaki Daily News.
Well, yeah, but...
And he looks so proud of it. He's so happy.
Oh,
It's a great story.
Oh, my God, look at it. It's such a weird shape, too. That's not an impressive carrot. I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
I mean, you know, if I saw it in the supermarket, I'd be like, fuck, that's a big carrot.
That's a weird carrot. I wouldn't buy a carrot that looked like that.
As far as big vegetables go, that's not that impressive.
It's not very impressive at all. I can't remember what her job is. What's her job? Courtney Johnston, who is the director of the Dallas Art Museum, after I shared this story on Twitter today, she showed a few photos, historical photos from the National Library's archives. And now there are some properly decent vegetables which have been grown by New Zealanders.
Now, if you search biggest carrot, or probably massive carrot as well, I imagine. Let's try that, massive carrot,
massive,
on Google Images.
Are you doing a safe search? Or?
I've got safe search on at the moment. I'll turn it off in a second and see what that does. But there's some much more impressive carrots.
Massive carrot.
Biggest carrot.
The impressive growth doesn't stop at his carrots. The potatoes and tomatoes have also taken off, with Mr. Taylor collecting 2 ice cream containers full of tomatoes every second day. And here's a quote. The tomatoes have rocketed away this year, and I can't believe how big the potatoes are, he said. Actually, I could probably do better than that.
The tomatoes have rocketed away.
All right, I'm not allowed to use the sound effects
because it makes me laugh. The right word for that.
And I don't actually know what he sounds like. I'm sure he sounds
safe
like...
Safe search a, off,
yep.
By the way. Safe search off, and I've searched massive carrot, and I've scrolled down a good way down the page. I have yet to see a penis. Carrot tops come up.
Wowee! That one that the lady's holding from Jim Holton Co. UK at the top of the Google image search for massive carrot is extraordinarily long. Is that photoshopped? I don't know.
I don't know. So there you go. This is why regional newspapers aren't great. This is the strange thing that happens when you syndicate regional newspapers onto national newspaper sites.
New Zealand has a long history with large carrots. Let's not forget what we've got in Oahu there.
Yep, that's not actually a real carrot.
That might explain all the broken teeth.
Maybe made of fiberglass.
You know what I want now? Because I've just done a search for colossal carrot, and our pal here, Ian Taylor, his photo is number 1. But number 2 and 3 and 7, 9 and 15 and 17 and 21 are all big, moist, thick, icinged wadges of carrot cake. And right now, I could do with one of those, actually.
Should we just call the show off and go find some carrot cake?
Let's go and find some carrot cake. Where can we get some decent carrot cake?
I don't know. Where you get a good carrot cake at this time of night?
I mean, it must be possible.
24-hour carrot cake shop?
It seems like a business opportunity that needs to be exploited.
Well, let's put it out there for free. Anyone who wants to start up a 24-hour carrot cake shop is free to do so. We've given you the idea.
Yep.
We just want a carrot cake.
Yep. Oh, this week's drink, because as you'll recall from last week, if you can't do it drunk, you can't do it.
Yeah, I've run that by a few people at work. They all agree.
This week's drink is a double Spatzold Dark and LMP sugar-free shandy in a litre stein.
That's rather an interesting combo.
Yep, it is delicious. And believe it or not, with ice. Because
my in-laws enjoy LMP and bourbon.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that it's great.
Which I haven't quite come to terms with.
Yeah. I'm being judged in the chat room for my spates.
Well, yeah, but you mixed LMP with it, so, you know.
A sugar-free LMP.
Sugar-free.
It's not exactly a purist drink.
Don't drink 9 litres of that, though.
I will do my best not to drink 9 litres, but if I did, I mean, it might be all right, because the problem that the woman had with her Coke was that it was all the sugar and so on, wasn't it? No?
Yes, I'm not sure. No? It was just the sugar. I think there were probably a lot of other things going on that were not good for her.
Yeah.
It's a large amount of phosphoric acid, for one thing.
That doesn't sound like a good thing. That sounds like something that would allow you to strike your head on things and catch a flame.
Different sort of acid, but still not a good thing.
Yeah. Other things that are not good include Mark Lundy. This week we're going to be all over the place, because I've got a lot of news stories, but
I've got none.
They're in no particular order, so there's no kind of sensible segueing back and forth.
Can I have some number of vetoes?
Yes. Can we talk about Mark Lundy?
Yeah. All right.
All right. Now, there's no need to do any beeping on this, because I don't think anything is suppressed. And also, Mark Lundy is one of those funny ones where I do not have a strong opinion as to his guilt, because one of the key things in his favour is that there's this absolutely insane and seemingly impossible drive that he would have had to have done in order to be the guy that went and axe murdered his family. But on the other hand, he just seems so guilty.
Yeah, that's right. He would have had to make an average speed of 117 kilometres an hour or something.
117. I don't think that's right. I think it was faster.
Yeah, 117.
Oh, well, 117 seems fine.
Well, it says Wikipedia. I've never known Wikipedia to be wrong.
Well, if it's 117, that's fine.
Well, in rush hour traffic.
Now, that's the problem. Because I've read stories in the last few days since he was... what happened to him? I don't know. Was he acquitted? What happened? Something's happened anyway. So... the Privy Council have said what? I can't be bothered finding the details. Oh, he has won the right to appeal.
To the Privy Council?
To the Privy Council, apparently. What? Is that all that's happened?
Yeah, in February 2013, the Privy Council agreed to hear Lundy's appeal.
Okay, well, so that's all that's happened so far. But anyway, so, there are a couple of things that are, you know, somewhat problematic about this. I just don't know if he did it or not, and they really better prove it. They better prove it. I suspect that the driving thing... if it's possible to do it, they better demonstrate that it's possible. Or now, something that I read was that he would have to have driven, 140 kilometres, I heard, actually.
Yeah, it's a 300-kilometre round trip, I think.
Right. So, and he had a very limited amount of time to do it, and he had to be back in time for a certain thing. But it also required him, it allowed for him having an hour for doing the murders. I don't know that he needed an hour for that. That could be the bit where he was much faster than they expected.
Again, Wikipedia says this is the assumptions that I'm based on. Presuming the crime, where we go, Lundy would have had to drive to Palmerston North in rush hour traffic at an average speed of 117 kilometres an hour, killed his wife and child, staged the scene to look like a burglary, disposed of the incriminating evidence, and presuming the crime and cover up took approximately 20 minutes, made the return journey back to Petone at an average speed of 120 kilometres an hour.
Right.
That's an average speed, of course. I mean, you know, part of that you're going to be driving on... It's not all state highway open road between the two places. Part of that you're going to be driving in 50k an hour zones.
Mm.
So, it certainly that aspect alone does seem difficult.
Some people drive very fast. And here's another thing. I mean, he didn't actually need to get rid of the evidence. He could just put it in his car. He wasn't picked up by the police or taken in for questioning or whatever for like a week. So he actually had plenty of time to, get rid of the axe or whatever. Anyway, yeah, the whole thing is absolutely horrific. And of course, there is the other question of how did his wife's brain apparently get on his clothing? Which, you'd have to say it's unlikely for you to have a bit of brain on your clothes. I mean, it's possible to have other kinds of blood around the place for perfectly innocent reasons, but not brain so much.
Oh, well, we'll see how this goes then.
Yeah. I really don't want the police to keep getting things wrong, though.
Yeah, I'm more or less happy with people to have as many appeals as they can have, really. It's costly.
If you're guilty, then I want you to be in jail while you're doing it. And if you're not guilty, I want you to be released and then to get, you know, whatever is a reasonable sort of a settlement, you know, to go on and live your life. You know, if you're not guilty, then it's a terrible shame to be in there, and you hope that the system. You hope that the system worked in cases like Bain, where, I mean, everyone knows that I think that guy is guilty. But, you know, you have to hope that he wasn't, just for the sake of having any trust for the system. I mean, the old saying is, you know, you'd rather 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be locked up. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, of course it's true, but, yeah. I would rather that all innocent people go free and all guilty people get locked up. I would actually just prefer that it worked like that. Very simple.
Certainly. I would, definitely like the... Circus is up until 11 p.m. in Mount Eden. We can go now. I would certainly like the justice system to be weighted as heavily towards innocence as possible.
Yeah.
You know,
speaking of the justice system and innocence, how many condoms... Well, I've moved on to another story. How many condoms is it legal to carry in New York City?
What?
Dylan.
This is a thing? This is an actual thing? It's not one of those bullshit laws that doesn't really exist that people say exists?
It is one of those bullshit laws that doesn't really exist. And the police claim that it exists because they use the number of condoms that a person is carrying from one up as evidence that that person is a sex worker. But the thing is that New York City has its own brand of condom. That these cities give away condoms.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's this tactic is being used by police in New York, LA, Washington DC, and San Francisco.
So if you're a woman and you're carrying a bunch of condoms, then you're a sex worker.
Yeah.
I can't be bothered wasting much. It's ridiculous to me that people that prostitution is illegal.
And you'd have to say that, I mean, it's not like we've been hit by bolts of lightning or rocks from space since we legalized prostitution.
No, we should probably talk to someone in Family First about that. They'll just see, oh, wait, is Family First a thing anymore? Yeah, Family First still exists, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We should probably talk to someone in Family First to find out what's really happened.
Yeah.
This actually reminds me, there was a case.
I've got someone on the line from Family First. Family First spokesman Romney Romneyson. Are you there? What's really happened since prostitution was legalized? Thank you for joining us today.
Sure. So there was a thing in, I want to say Massachusetts, but I'm
that's
not
right.
Sure.
The name I came up with was Romney Romneyson, and it took me about 20 seconds. That's how. Yeah, I'm not on my game, actually, obviously, am I?
It was you, Romneyson.
Yeah.
I think in Massachusetts or Rhode Island, I can't remember, one of those northeastern states,
yeah.
Where a woman and her husband, I think, have been convicted, or a woman and a man have been convicted of, or being, sorry, tried of, prosecuted for running some sort of sex business where she posed as a Pilates instructor and they'd go to the Pilates studio and have sex with her. And a few things have happened. One is her client list was released and published in newspapers, I think.
Yeah, golly.
Parts of it anyway. And the other thing is it turns out he was videoing clients.
Right.
Clients have taken a challenge and has made some of the videos available or something, and clients have attempted to sue him, and the judge has ruled that they have no right to privacy in that circumstance. While they're breaking the law, they have no right to privacy. Or that, more specifically, the populace, the citizenry, should not expect that they would have a right to privacy while engaging in a criminal activity.
You know what? I wish that our courts went on that side of things a little bit more often, because some of the suppression orders that have been passed down are pretty ridiculous, frankly. Maybe the idea is that, you know, the right to privacy. Maybe I mean, it's an important thing, but if you did it, or if you were accused of it, and even if you were found not guilty of it, and very clearly not guilty of it, maybe we should be able to know all of those things.
Yeah, a Zumba instructor, there you go. in 15 Maine.
15 minutes.
Yeah. Maine.
Maine.
Bill Gates calls for more innovation at Microsoft after past mobile mistakes. That's pretty much all I've got. There's a lot of things, like cell phones, where we didn't get out in the lead early, he says. We didn't miss cell phones, but the way that we went about it didn't allow us to get the leadership. Clearly, this is a mistake.
What's Bill Gates' role in Microsoft? Is he still chairman of the board or something?
He is the chairman.
Hmm.
Microsoft chairman. And I guess, you know, big shareholder and so on. But Ballmer, I guess, is CEO, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
So Gates was chairman and CEO, maybe? Or maybe he was just CEO and he moved back to this kind of sort of...
For a while he was definitely chairman and CEO. A thing that I just... Microsoft frustrate me.
Mm.
They're quite good.
Not Windows 8. Stuff. Not Windows 8.
But, well, they make a lot of weird decisions.
Yeah.
And don't do some things particularly well that they should, frankly, know better than to do badly. Yeah. But
anyway. Yeah, so we have a big demonstration machine with a giant monitor on the wall in the office. And it was Windows 8. And it has been moved back to Windows 7. And,
all right.
And I don't know. You know, that's not even anecdata. That is a mere anecdote. But that happened for a reason, you know. Windows 8, just, it's not that good. And the apologists who possibly rightly told me to mind my own business until I, you know, whatever. I think that at some point they're going to have to eat their words because it's not very good and it is not going very well.
So I think I've mentioned it on the show before. There's an animated video, like an animated critique of Windows 8, which I've posted on Twitter a couple of times because I think it's really good. And I think even if you... Basically, a guy sits down and he says, I was going to do a review of Windows 8 and I couldn't do it because I physically couldn't do it. The machine made it impossible for me to do my work. It's essentially the conclusion he draws. And he goes through explaining his experience and why that was the case and also seems to have a very good understanding of a bunch of issues to do with usability and, you know, interface design and things like that. Mm. So he makes some points, you know, about how I couldn't do this and why does this happen? And people in the comments and people who have replied to my tweets about it in the past have always just gone, oh, he should have done this and he should have done this. It's like, well, that's, you're kind of missing the point. The whole point of the video and a number of points that he makes is that he has been using Windows since, you know, Windows 3.
Yeah.
And this is the first time he's been completely lost in an upgrade.
Yeah.
And you know, and he's making very clear the points about usability that don't work. And I think those are the ones, you know, I'm sure there's lots of wonderful innovations in Windows 8.
Yeah.
But they've tried to make an operating system that is the same for desktop use and touch use, and those paradigms are not the same.
Mm. And the reason I'm alarmed by how bad Windows 8 is that Windows 7 is... I mean, Windows 7 is as good as it will ever be. I mean, Windows 7 is as good as Windows 7 will ever be. You know, if you want something better than that, you need to go to something else. Do you know what I mean? And so... Windows 7, the original version of Windows 7, like pre-Service Pack 1, that is coming out of support in, like, April. So, I mean, that's the original release of Windows 7 is nearly end of life already. Now, the Service Pack is not end of life, and that's, you know, got several years more, I think. But at some point, the last version of Windows, so far, that I'm happy to use, is going to go away. And then what?
Well, maybe it won't. Who knows what will happen? I mean, if Windows 8 is not being adopted as well as it should, then they might have to retrench their position. No, not retrench.
But they double down on bad decisions lately, it seems, and possibly always.
Well, lots of companies do that. We'll see. I mean, you know, maybe they could cease to exist.
The Office ribbon. They doubled down on that, and they made the progenitor and the champion of the Office ribbon the... manager of the Windows division now. So, I mean, how is Windows 9 going to be better?
Has anyone adapted to the Office ribbon?
People who had never used Office before have.
Really?
I'm sure. People who don't know how much worse it is.
I just assume that everyone's experience with the Office ribbon is the same as mine, which is going up and going, oh, fuck, where is it? And
where is it?
All the tabs until you find the thing that you
need. Where is it? That's my experience with the ribbon every time. Where is it?
Where is it?
Simple stuff. Simple stuff. I mean, I don't mean like make a bit of text bold, but still very simple stuff.
Also, save as in Office, F12. Why is it F12? Why is it not Control-Shift-S like it is on most other applications?
Or just Control-S.
Yeah. No, Control-S is save, but Control-Shift-S is usually what save as, most applications.
I always have to go Alt-F and bring down the menus, which is still really there, just hidden most of the time.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of internet porn database. Where's it from? I don't even know what the database is called. I suppose it's not important. No one here. The Internet Adult Film Database.
Oh, okay, not just the internet.
And this was started being put together in the 1980s by, I guess, porn hounds who wrote stuff out on index cards about porn stars and the movies that they were in. And they've migrated it onto the internet and grown it up and made it into this big archive of all of the porn stars, you know, when they started, what their first movie was, what all their movies were, what the things were that they did in different movies and so on, which I don't know if that's useful or not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, if you're really interested in a particular porn star. But what this chap John Millward did...
Do you think there's like a 6 degrees of separation thing for porn?
Well, I bet Kevin Bacon is only 1 or 2 degrees away from almost all of them, because many porn people have now crossed over, and you don't have to have been in many movies to have only... I mean, because Kevin Bacon's been in a lot of stuff. You know, it's easier to have a 2 or a 3 on Kevin Bacon to probably actual, genuine, hardcore, disgusting porn people. This guy scraped that database. I don't know if he got the whole thing or if he just got, you know, a reasonable portion of it. But he's then done a bunch of analysis on it. And he's got, like, all the headshots and so on. And he's been able to sort of myth bust.
I'll just put this out there. Ron Jeremy's Bacon number is 2, so that gives us a frame of reference.
Right, there you go. So he's done things like tell us what the most popular names are. So the most common female first names for porn stars are Nikki, Jessica, Lisa, Kelly, Angel, Nicole, Michelle, Victoria, Vanessa, and Samantha. Okay, they sound like very normal names, don't they? Hmm. And the men are David, Tony, John, Mike, Michael, Steve, Mark, Alex, Chris, and Jason. But their surnames are, well, I mean, they're a similar matter. Anyway, the most common on average name for a woman would be Nikki Lee. And coincidentally, nice. The most common for a man would be David Lee.
Oh, interesting. They're probably husband and wife.
They could very well be.
I wonder what they look like.
You also get names like Chris Steele. That'd be quite a common one. Or Lisa Starr, Kelly Fox, Vanessa nice. Sweet. Very nice names. Did you ever work out what your porn star name was? I seem to recall it was something like pet name, street name when you were a kid, something like that.
It's not good. I'm not gonna discuss it right now because the pet name thing doesn't work out well. Some of them are also based on middle name, and I don't have a middle name, so that doesn't work out well. Although it could, because then I just have the one name, which, you know, it's not good.
Yeah,
I would not be a good porn star for a variety of reasons. Name is just one.
I'm Coon Lincoln.
Well, that works out well.
I'm Coon Lincoln, and I love that ass. May have gone a little bit too far with that. Tumblr.
Yep, Tumblr.
Tumblr is not what you think. But Dylan, you're going to have to get very familiar with Tumblr very soon.
What do I think Tumblr is?
Well, I don't know what you think Tumblr is. This says what something is about... Oh, well, apparently, it's the favourite social networking site of Americans aged under 25.
Really?
Yep. Apparently, Tumblr has smashed Facebook for that specific group. But you know what?
Really?
But for me, I'll tell you what Tumblr is. Full to the fucking gills with pornography.
I know. Tumblr was banned at work for a long time because it was so full of porn.
It is so smutty. And it's sort of Instagram generation smut as well. So it's very attractive looking stuff.
Well, the amazing thing is if you didn't know it was there, you probably wouldn't stumble upon it. But then once you find any porn Tumblr, there's this whole world you tumble into of...
This is like porn. The nzsale.co.nz sex toy sales. Because they don't put them in the menus, but they do put them in the mail out.
Oh.
And I mentioned one time on Twitter to you, I think, this site is absolutely full of vibrators. And you were like, no, it's not. And I was like, well, you're not seeing it the way I'm seeing it. It's just like butt plugs and dildos and strap-ons and massages and just all kinds of filthy stuff. But if you just
it's a reflection of our world, isn't it?
If you just log into the normal site, it's all like, you know, children's toys and you know, designer jeans. But if you go
little porn.
Anyway, so that is the average faces of 10,000 porn stars. And Tumblr, actually, I'm one story further on than I even thought I was.
Yeah, I don't know how you did that. You just mixed two stories together, went back and came forward again.
Gonna pull a handbrake. And the thing is that a lot of my stories actually are really related to each other. But because they're just a random mishmash of tabs at the moment, I'm just coming to them as they arrive. And so, you know, hey, what are you going to
do? So what were you saying about Tumblr? It's the most popular social network.
You don't believe that?
Really?
Apparently.
I find that so hard to believe. Anyway, all right, fine, whatever.
This is according to, I don't know, some survey from 2013.
Something, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, the details are always boring. That's why I don't like to read.
Yeah, it's hard to quantify what popular. Who cares? Doesn't matter. I don't give a
doesn't
shit.
Doesn't matter. Now, here's one that you will give a shit about, and forgive me for getting through the first part quickly. Baby boy struck and killed in Kaipara driveway accident. This is a story that we hear happening over and over and over again. This is a one-year-old child who was, apparently he was playing on a driveway. We don't need to go into the details, and he was run over by a car.
And most likely, all the details on the most likely the car was a family member or close that's family right. friend, something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Which makes it, I don't know if it makes it worse, it seems like it makes it worse. Like if you imagine if that was a parent, lost your child.
They happen so often, and it's like the kid is just playing behind the car, someone gets in, doesn't know the kid's behind there, and just backs over it, and then that's it, it's done. I have a solution which will solve a hell of a lot of these, and it is so simple. Don't nose into driveways, back into driveways, because when you arrive, you'll have a clear view of the driveway and you'll see if there's a child on the driveway while you're backing in and you will be able to choose to or not to. And when you look forwards, but when you look forwards out of a car, of course, it is still possible that there could be a child down there that you won't see. But in general, visibility forwards out of a car is much better than visibility backwards.
You say that, but I think, you know, in the same way that you would, you know, you see up the drive when you pull up and then you back into it.
Yeah.
In that period of time between when you see and when you start backing, that's when something happens. The same as when you get in your car, you see that there's no child on the drive, but when you start backing down the drive,
there's no perfect solution there that doesn't include someone standing there with flags guiding you out.
Cameras and things that help, but yeah, just
okay. And every car?
No, and also fenced driveways.
And,
I mean,
and
1%? You can retrofit them quite cheaply.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I think that this is a solution, and I don't know why you're arguing against it, that will actually help in a lot of cases.
My only reason that I argue against it is I think it's more likely that you would, well, depending on, I mean, obviously if you have your children with you, no problem, but then you probably have them with you when you go out and you don't run them over then either. If you don't have your children with you, I almost think you're more likely to come home to children in the driveway than you are to leave children.
But you'll see them.
You need to control the children when you
right, but you'll see them. The point is that you'll see them.
But you'll see them when you get in the car. I don't think it would make much difference.
I don't think you're thinking this through, dude. Because you can see the ground behind your car when you're backing a certain distance away. The problem with these children playing behind a car on a driveway is that they're right there at the beginning. They're right against the car at the beginning. And that's why they're getting run over.
Maybe. I don't think it is. I think they're running into the path while the driver's not looking. I think that's probably what happens in most cases. Because when you get in the car, you're aware that there's children around and you tell them to keep away from the car or whatever you do. And then one of them makes
the
decision.
But you've never backed over a child.
No, and I also have a fully fenced section where they can't get where the cars are.
Mm.
So, but
and also they are shackled most of the day.
They are what? Shackled?
Shackled.
Yeah, that's right.
If all children were put in safety bubbles, then there'd be no problem. They'd just bounce off. Boing.
That would be awesome. Zorbs.
Like Bubble Boy. Turia, Tariana Turia, anti-smoking campaigner, has absolutely smashed Big Tobacco. The government is going to introduce plain packaging, something that smashes Big Tobacco. Plain packaging strips cigarette packets of all marketing and branding, developed and refined over decades. And it is a body blow to Big Tobacco. So good for you.
Now,
Tariana?
It is good. It is good, and I'm pleased with it. David Farrer makes one interesting point, and that is that we don't. I think he's correct. There's not really any actual study on whether or not it is really effective in reducing consumption or reducing smoking.
Yeah, I think
we assume it will be, and if nothing else, it does. You know, it removes a type of marketing that's still available to tobacco companies. But then again, his downside that he sees if it doesn't reduce smoking is that it does set a precedent that people can try and exploit for other things, alcohol, as the tobacco companies have said, or fizzy drinks, fast food.
Nothing is the same as tobacco.
Well, that's my argument. Nothing is the same as tobacco. There's nothing else that you can use properly and still have it definitively killing you.
Yeah. Yeah. She also is proposing a 30% increase on the tax on tobacco, increasing each year for I don't know how long, basically until it goes away.
Ever.
Probably. Yeah. Pretty much until it goes away.
Yeah, I never know how I feel about the rising prices of tobacco, though, because the problem is I think people probably adjust their budgets and, you know, neglect other things. There's always the stereotype of beneficiaries spending money on cigarettes instead of their children, which probably isn't true, but at the same time, it probably is some truth to it that people, you know, prioritise their addictive habit over other things that they should spend money on more wisely. I don't know how high you have to make the price before people actually stop.
Increasing levies on booze make me angry. And so,
well, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't know. See, you know, I don't know. It seems silly to me because it seems that people will, you know, most smokers I've spoken to say, I kind of want to quit, but, you know, but some excuse.
Yeah.
So if they really want to quit, then they just quit. I don't know how much. Don't know how much the price has to go up before their want actually becomes a do.
Yeah. Well, it seems like smokers have to try giving up several times before they generally manage it.
Now, so plain packaging will happen once the WTO appeals against Australia's plain packaging have been resolved. Is that my understanding? Something like that.
Don't know. I think we should just fucking force on through with it, like bullies.
Well, I think it was primarily of not jumping straight into something that's already being adjudicated at the WTO.
I don't really care what's happening with other countries at the WTO. Don't particularly trust the WTO.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Education Minister Hekia Parata is defending her decision to close or merge 19 Christchurch schools. And talking to Firstline this morning was loath to say sorry for the upheaval and the stress that it's causing. Under questioning from anchor Rachel Smalley, Ms. Parata said she understood that some communities are very disappointed, that their school's been closed, and that her ministry had learned lessons following last year's bungled announcement. No shit. But 3 News political editor Patrick Gower, also appearing on First Line, said her attempt at an apology was bureaucratic gobbledygook. And let's not forget that this is the same woman that John Key claimed was the most effective communicator in the national government. And she really is awful.
What was the... There was some... Didn't someone actually analyse her gobbledygook? Like, isn't there some objective measure of how understandable speech is?
Right.
And she's sure I saw something like that. Someone analysed it.
Right off one end
very,
of the spectrum.
Very low.
Yeah. I'm absolutely sure that's true. God, she's awful. She's so awful. I don't know that I like any of them, but, you know.
I've not been following it very closely. I don't know.
It seems like schools, one of the unavoidable facts of the universe is that schools do actually tend to get closed. Because, you know, populations shift and change, and you'd have to say that Christchurch had changed quite a bit.
Well, and schools, you know, people build bigger schools with more, and which makes sense in some ways. You can, you know, better resource a larger school. But
let's not forget how she notified schools' principals that their schools were being closed. They arrived at a big conference, I guess, and she said, now, based on the colour of your name badge, that's if your school's being closed or staying open. And that and that was the announcement. So if you had a red badge or a green badge or a yellow badge, that was actually significant.
Wow.
What the fuck, you
mentalist. I wonder if people
figured
that out. I would have thought if you all turned up there and you're all wearing different coloured name badges that someone might have figured that out.
Yeah.
I would have thought that would be something that would occur to people pretty quickly.
And really,
especially if that was the colour scheme.
Or, like, you look down at your badge and it's got your name and that's fine. But then it's got the name of your school. It's got the name of your school and it's got a strike through.
Or your name, and then below, it, former principal of. laughing.
You're going to laugh even more when you discover how great the Belgians are at hunting. So Belgians went on a boar hunt. There were 200 hunters and there were 170 wild boars. There's this town of Postel. It's in the north of Belgium. It's not fair at all. This town, Postel, organized the hunt because they've had an explosion in the population of these wild boars.
And they've been damaging the population of hunters.
Well, they arranged this hunt, this special hunt, just to cull them back. And the hunters coordinated to drive these boars into kind of a killing zone. And they had marksmen in strategic locations. And it didn't work at all. There were 170 boars, 200 hunters. They got one. That's it. One. All the rest got away.
How is that even remotely possible?
I don't understand, man. I just don't understand it. People who... I don't even know. I don't know how it's possible. Wouldn't have happened here. But here, we probably wouldn't have had marksmen. We would have had people set dogs on them and just stab them in the neck, which seems to work pretty well at killing a boar, but, you know, it's also a bit dangerous. Anyway, a spokesperson for the event and for the town said it was a successful rehearsal.
Well, I suppose in as much as none of the hunters got shot, yeah, they did pretty well.
Yeah, they're gonna try again and see how it goes next time. Now there was a movie a year or two ago. Yes, it's the next story.
Yeah,
yeah. There was a movie a year or two ago called. It was about video games, and it had that Chili Pepper salesman guy. Oh, what was it? It was King of Kong. That's what it was. And that was about having the record score for the game. That's changed back and forth a few times over the years. Obviously, these stand-up arcade games were biggest in the 80s and not since then, but they've had a little bit of a resurgence, and there have been people that have continued playing them competitively, you know, all the time, right through. And one game that I remember hating with a passion was Q-Bert. I think I probably only played it two or three times. I was definitely more of a... I mean, it was later on. I liked Wonder Boy and... what was it? Smokescreen and Superman and Robocop. And that was a few years later, probably, than some of these games came out. But
anyway. Yeah. I vaguely remember Q-Bert. I don't think I ever played it. I think I saw ads for it in, like, a comic book or something.
Yeah.
I don't recall ever having played it.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a standing high score for nearly three decades... 33,273,520 points achieved by Rob Gerhard, I guess, in the 1980s sometime. And it's like, well, that number doesn't mean anything. Well, you're right, it doesn't mean anything. But getting to that score took about 70 hours of continuous play.
Okay? Wow.
So it's really hard.
No pause?
I don't know. I mean, usually in these competitions, there's like... Every hour you get 5 minutes, and then every 4 hours you get 15 minutes or whatever to have a wee and have a sandwich or whatever. But I don't think that in this version of the game, I mean, it describes it as three full 24-hour days of playing, but I suspect, you know, there's a little bit of messing around here because all of those competitions, all of those, you know, really intense, long, like, challenges, like stand and hold your hand on the car sort of challenges, or longest on a unicycle, they all have breaks. They all have breaks.
Yeah, you have toilet breaks and things.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, unless you're worse, but you have a catheter. I don't know if the game actually doesn't support pausing.
Then you better keep going, I guess. Anyway... Finally, after just about 30 years, someone has managed to defeat the score. George Lutz took 84 hours and 50 minutes to beat the old score by about 4 million. Good for him.
He'll be telling his kids about that one. Well, you know, maybe.
Yeah, he might be. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll see a follow-up to King of Kong, which was a brilliant documentary, probably because the characters were so...
I now recall wanting to watch that and not having done so, so I'll Netflix it.
He is perceived and presented as a villain throughout, and that was the standing record holder since the 1980s. He is perceived as a villain, but, you know... He's just a man who was very good at a video game a long time ago, and other people have had a very hard time defeating him. And that, you know, it's a great documentary though. But, you know, I guess they make it dramatic, you know. Things that are not dramatic are John Key's perception of things. Apparently, he's not worried about the Sky City report.
Or anything.
No, he's not worried about anything. John Key, and other things, he made a promise in last year's budget that the government would build 2,000 houses. 2,000 new houses. It's actually said more than 2,000 houses. How many do you think they built?
Seven.
Last year, 68, and the year before that, 56.
Close.
Yeah, pretty close. Really close to 2,000, you know. Just like,
well, look at that. If you put those two numbers together, that is
better than 100%.
More than 100. That's three digits. They're only one digit off.
You're absolutely right.
So
I shouldn't be such a wrecker.
So the Auditor General or the Auditor General's office put together a report about the tender process for building a bloody big convention centre and Sky City's involvement in that tender process and the government's involvement and Sky City's involvement in that tender process.
Yeah.
And the national government, John Key specifically, is claiming that the report vindicates him, which is fantastic for him. And the Labour government, the Labour Party is claiming that the report skewers him, basically.
Yeah.
So
they're kind of both right.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how you interpret your ground rules. As I understand it, and I haven't read the report, I've just read a series of 140 character summations of the report.
Mm.
Is the gist was that they didn't do anything entirely improper because there wasn't really anything entirely improper to do. There isn't like laws or defined criteria for these types of processes, but they did unfairly favour Sky City by allowing Sky City a lot more information than other tenderers.
Yeah.
And working with Sky City to better their proposal.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, it's a long time since I've had to bid for jobs and so on, but not knowing, you know, those various criteria, like what is your actual fucking budget, you know, that kind of thing. Not knowing that stuff makes it really hard, You know, you always want to be competitive. You know?
The critical point was not knowing that the government wasn't willing to completely fund a convention centre.
Right.
Not knowing that the government, in fact, wanted to
Have a partnership of some kind.
Yeah, have some sort of partnership.
Yeah. So Adam ZNZ in the chat room says that, this is back to the Q-Bert story, apparently you can get hundreds of lives in the game, so he just left the machine to go on bathroom breaks. That would be intense, wouldn't it? That would be scary.
Yeah. You're like, fuck, I hope I don't die too much while I'm having this shit.
It might be that you just die once and then you need to press a button to start it, to continue.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Player one, start. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a pretty good solution. I mean, I don't remember many arcade machines having pause buttons, though.
No.
So that's probably the only way to go. Man, I loved RoboCop so much. I clocked it every night, 20 cents, and I'd clock it. Boom, straight through. Those games where they're the same every time, and so you learn the pattern, and you know, you start shooting at the new enemies before they come onto the screen.
At that sort of stage, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think there was quite the level of ability to make more intelligent games. I mean, even Wolfenstein was, you know, the same every time.
Yeah. Speaking of not being able to be more intelligent, so Bomber Bradbury has announced his next thing. And so we were quite pleased and relieved when he said that he was leaving Tumik and stopping blogging there. But there was that barb in his announcement. There was only a week or two ago that he was doing that. There was that barb that he had a new thing planned, and he's revealed what that new thing is, and that is thedailyblog.co.nz, where he and like 20 or 30 of his awful left-wing cronies, many of whom I probably like a great deal. I shouldn't, you know, I'm kidding when I say they're all awful left-wing cronies. I mean, there's people like David Slack, who's friggin' great. But actually, there's also Selwyn Manning and Bomber Bradbury, though, you know, so, and Tim Selwyn.
So he's left the...
And Chris Trotter. I've heard enough from Chris Trotter. I don't need to hear more.
He's left the weird little left-wing blog site he set up to set up another left-wing blog site.
Apparently a much bigger blog site. But the thing is that Bomber is so alienating. I mean, I'm a lefty, I am a lefty, and I find him awful. And he's a lefty, apparently. He's
agree.
A lefty. I think he turns people off with his bombastic hyperbole.
No, but you know, minutes. It's he does. But you know, we are equally turned off by and choose to hold up certain members of the right wing, especially blogosphere, as you know. Yeah. Oh well, you know, look at Cameron Slater.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess we all have to have our extremes, and he's just one of them.
And he'll probably be better than Seven Sharp.
Well, that goes without saying. Oh, unless the only thing I've decided on TV that's not better than Seven Sharp.
Yeah.
Is the radio.
Right.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's not good.
Who are the people?
Moving on.
They're actual radio people.
I don't feel like slagging someone's creative endeavor, but I think
now, obviously, given the industry that you're in, you have to be careful of that stuff, but I think that it's pretty important that we be able to be honest about what people make, because in New Zealand we have very limited budgets. We have limited kind of available creative processing cycles. And wasting time on making shit when New Zealanders are capable of making really fucking great stuff, just stop making the shit. And if are like, I'm not going to say that it's bad, but it's bad.
Here's my summary of thoughts on these things. I don't think everyone hates the radio the way I do. Apparently, some people quite like it.
Just most people hate it.
Clearly, it works for some audiences. The problem I have with New Zealand TV...
Yeah.
So first, what do we do? Bokehs and brickbats. The bokeh is... that TV3 especially is really willing to support New Zealand TV. They, you know, if you look at the New Zealand TV shows that are commissioned, a lot of them come out of TV3.
Yeah.
But if, yeah, the problem is the people who get that money are usually the same old, I guess the same old group who you see time and time again. So you get your trusted faces like your Jeremy Corbett's and other people who are trusted commodities, but who perhaps aren't thinking as originally as they could. Now, there's some flip sides to that.
I'll tell you flip side number one, and that is Matt Heath and Chris Stapp, who were trusted and made a really cool show for no money, and then made a really cool show for a little bit more money, and then made the exact same show for far more money, and then made a movie which was exactly the same for unbelievably larger amounts of money, and basically made the same shit over and over again, and it was cool the first time and got progressively less cool. And all the while they were doing that, they were preventing other people with new ideas, which they very clearly did not have, from making other stuff. Now, you could argue, other people should learn how to get that funding.
Well, there is, but the problem is, the way the funding structure works, you can't, you can't just have a good idea and go to New Zealand on Air. You have to have a good idea and go to a broadcaster, and the broadcaster has to stand beside you and go to New Zealand on Air with you, and then the broadcaster has to continue to stand beside you through the whole process. Now, that does happen, and people, good things come up, but what I'd really like to see, and I hope that it will eventually start to happen, and it has happened a couple of times, things like Auckland Days was a fantastic example, which is, some creative people who are not...
As long as you don't watch the Christmas special.
I haven't seen the Christmas special, so fair enough.
Keep it that way. But oh my God, it's so bad.
But some creative people who are not the same faces managed to get some money to do something that was a little bit different. And instead of TV, which is really expensive. And
it still wasn't actually that cheap, although, it's all relative. One of them has had at least one or two other series. And the other was, one of the stars of Shortland Street. So they're not exactly outsiders.
No, but they were certainly not the people you bank on. And they didn't. They got comparatively little money. And because the problem is, even if you consider the amount of money they got to make the show quite a lot, they got backed to do it because it could be good to go on TV and sit on demand. Whereas, it's all well and good supporting a show and giving them the money to make the show, but then as a broadcaster, you also have to commit time to that show, which is really scary.
Yeah,
because time, is literally money.
Yeah,
you have to put a show on, and you have to get ratings so that you can sell advertising, and advertising pays for everything. And you don't want to take chances on.
It's a risky business. TV's a risky business.
Yeah. Hopefully, it gets better and better when there's more ways of distributing content and also ways of monetizing that content, which is the difficult part because obviously. If you're going to pay someone money to make something, you need to have some way of recouping that cost.
Now, Neil in the chat room said, look at Flight of the Conchords, and I'm not sure what she means, but possibly what she means is, when I was talking about Matt Heath and Chris Stapp making the same thing over and over again, Flight of the Conchords made a radio show of Flight of the Conchords, and then they made a TV show of the same thing. And you'd have to say that it was pretty good as a TV show, right?
But you'd also say that their concept was turned down by both networks here,
right?
Before they went to the States and managed to somehow get it onto HBO. So,
right.
You know, and now we quite happily claim their success, yeah. But we didn't let them do it initially.
After the fact, yeah, I think if we had more of a kind of a piloting mentality, then that might work out a bit better. But pilots are really expensive as well. I mean, for the price of, you know, making an episode, you're getting a lot of the way to making five episodes. You know, yeah, you get everyone together. You know, and
well, it all depends. I think there's ways that these things could be streamlined and we could have more creative output on TV. I love, every year I do 48 hours and every year I love the amazing creative output that comes out of, you know, just 100 different people around the country.
And that ties back to the Auckland Days guys as well, because they were making that in a weekend.
Yeah.
Episode in a weekend. Absolutely insane. Absolutely.
And brilliant. And you know, definitely drawing on what they'd done with 48 hours.
Yeah.
In terms of doing it cheap, doing it quick and finding a good balance, because a lot of the people involved in Auckland Days were, you know, TV professionals, but finding a good balance between the way, you know, proper funded TV is made and the way you make a student film. And there's a balance that they struck quite well, I think.
Yeah. I can't remember what his name was. Kieran or something?
Kyle
Norton?
Yeah.
It's something like that.
Kyle McNaughton.
Kyle McNaughton. He was on the show, back then. Good dude.
Yeah.
And great show apart from the Christmas special. And, you know, more of that, please, but not exactly that. Not exactly that.
Yeah.
Julian Arsang, I like to pronounce it that way,
yeah, okay.
Sees legal defence in politics. He reckons that Australians would like to elect a creepy little sex pest as a senator. That's what he reckons. That's how he reckons he's going to be able to get out of his legal woes.
How's he going to get to Australia?
He's fucking not, and no one would vote for him. I mean, you know, he'd get some name recognition votes. No way would they elect. Actually, it is Australia.
No, a lot of people fight. You know, like to support the underdog and see him as the underdog.
The Aussie battler, even though he's a fucking sex pest creep.
You know, my favorite thing about the Julian Assange situation, is. The same people who, okay, so if I criticise, and this has happened very specifically to me on a couple of occasions, if I criticise Julian Assange's actions in terms of fleeing from justice as he has, and telling the bullshit made up stories about why he's doing that, I am immediately seen as being some sort of, you know, apologist for the USA or for whatever, for the CIA.
Yeah.
Yet. At the same time, you know, they criticise, you know, they'll presumably, I'm assuming most of the same people will criticise the IDF and Israel's policies in Palestine, but would hate to be called anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I'm criticising one point, and they also say, you know, look at all the good things Wikipedia did. WikiLeaks did, and WikiLeaks did some great stuff. WikiLeaks isn't Julian Assange, and WikiLeaks isn't fleeing justice.
Yeah.
Julian Assange is.
Yeah.
And he's a dick.
He's a dick.
He didn't used to... Well, he probably always was a dick, but he didn't make his dickness that obvious.
Teen thought to be smarter than Einstein.
Okay.
A 16-year-old British girl has left some of the best minds in the world shocked after scoring 161 in an IQ test, earning her a place in Mensa.
Really?
I don't understand how this is a story. 161 is pretty high. It's not that high. I'm like 152.
Some people are smart. Get over it.
Some people are smart. But this, no one is shocked. No one is shocked. This isn't a big deal. She's, I mean, Mensa, it's not a small organization. It's easy to get in. All you have to do is learn how to do puzzles well. And then you can get into Mensa.
You know, there's that great saying, I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member.
Right.
Mensa is one of those clubs.
Yeah.
I've known some Mensians. I don't want to, you know, if anyone's listening who is in Mensa, good on you. Some of the people I've known from Mensa have been not the most.
I know one of the ones you're talking about, and he packed a lot of meat as well as being a big brain boy.
yeah, let's do it not so gracious and a bit.
Family members.
Oh, I pushed a button. I didn't mean to.
Moving on.
So Oscar Pistorius, do we want to talk about this? I would like to talk very quickly because we don't have a lot of time to talk about it. I'd like to talk about how very quickly this story changed. Because initially it was...
Between
you know,
when I went to sleep and when I woke
up. It was like tragic accident. She was sneaking into the house for a Valentine's surprise and he shot her in the dark. And then later on it turned out that he, like, they were arguing all night and he smashed her with a cricket bat. He shot her and she ran away into another room and then he shot her some more times. And it's like... These stories, they're not even similar.
Well,
the dude is a rageaholic woman beater who must have absolutely terrified this woman and managed to kill her before she could escape.
How did that story get out so quickly? How did his angle on it get out so quickly?
It would impressive. Have been his handlers, right? It would have been his press people.
Yeah, did a good job.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that progresses.
Yeah. What a creep. What a creep. Just Migrate. No, I don't really want to talk about that. But so Posterous, which is where you have at least one website.
Yeah, I have a blog. But my Posterous blog is where I post things that aren't related to the things I post on my normal website.
Right. It's going
away. I
need away.
A pop filter. Can you hear that? There it is. I need a little... Anyway, carry on.
So it's going away because Twitter acquired Posterous, and they're shuttering it.
What I don't understand is why would you buy it...
Yeah.
And then close it. You didn't take any technology from it. It's not like Posterous was doing anything that Twitter now does.
This might be what is called an acqui-hire. So what they actually wanted was the engineering and programming talent or you know, something like that. It's extremely
frustrating. So as of 30th of April, not only does the site shut down and you can't post new things to it, everything that's there just ceases to exist. Any links to something.posterous.com. So when I – that whole – phone IMEI thing that I was involved in last year.
Yeah, big story.
My Posterous blog is where I've detailed that stuff.
Right.
Which got some retarded number of visits, a million maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Mm.
So that's dumb.
Yeah. In 2011, Posterous claimed to have 12.3 million blogs on the site, and who knows how many they have now. That's 2 years ago. Could be many more. And they are all going away. I hope everyone gets the message and escapes as quickly as possible and goes and fills Tumblr up.
Not
with
a million,
stuff
sorry, I was lying completely. My main IMEI USSD attack thing got 52,000 views.
Right. How about a story about another British team?
All the links to it will just stop working.
Actually, you know what? We don't have... here's one thing. Chubby Checker. Sues over penis app. Chubby Checker. It had never occurred to me that Chubby Checker is saying penis measure. Chubby Check. Chubby Checker. It wasn't a thing that ever entered my consciousness. Anyway, so someone created an iPhone app that is for measuring your penis size. And he's now, suing them for $500 million.
Here's another issue, though.
Yeah.
Who's going to take a photo of their erection with their iPhone? Actually, never mind. Lots of people, and then they'll post it on Tumblr.
Make it look like.
I'm sorry, I don't trust. Frankly, I wouldn't. I don't trust some fucking app I download off the internet with a photo of my penis.
No, I don't know that it took a photo. I would have thought it was probably something simpler, like it just displayed a ruler on it or something, and then you pressed where you ended, and I don't know. I don't even know. I don't have an iPhone, so I really don't know. Anyway, Chubby Checker. It's funny though. What a hilarious name. Now,
Hewlett Packard. What the fuck? Anyway,
One minute. What's your auntie been talking about? What's your auntie been sending you
been
on VHS?
About?
Actually, Survivor. It's back in season whatever the hell now. Something incredibly high, and it's another fans versus favorites season. Which, that's all right. That's good and it's bad. It's not exactly as great. It's season 26. It's not exactly as good as the Boston Rob season. Because, oh my God, that was such good play. He's the best ever. And maybe it's not as good as the previous season. But, if you like Survivor, you're going to like it. That's what my auntie's been talking about. What's your auntie been talking about?
Nothing.
5.
Well, that's lucky because we don't have a hell of a lot of time to talk 4. About Discourse. co.nz/VPN. Surprisingly 3. Inexpensive. If you can't do it drunk, you can't do it.
2.
And by all accounts, I can do it drunk.
1. Fish and chips.
See you again next time.
You're
Goodbye.
Listening to the weekly show on with course.
Right, we're using that one.
That'll do.
So he's suing Hewlett Packard.
Yeah.
Because the app is a Palmos app. And according to one website, the app was downloaded just 84 times.
And the
company that makes it is defunct.
What an idiot.
Also, though, Chubby Checker is a fantastic name for an app.
Now, isn't it?
Ah, yeah. Why did no one else do that? That's amazingly excellent.
Now it's hilarious. This is a Streisand effect. I mean, what does he think he's going to achieve out of this? He's going to get nothing.
So I don't understand you.
So he trademarked his name in 1997. But trademarks don't apply to everything. Do you think he specifically said, I want to trademark my name in the category of penis measurement devices?
Probably.
I mean, he may have. That would be pretty good foresight. Oh, there was a story I did want to talk about, and that's cyclists winning support for Bridgepath.
Oh, we'll wait and see what happens with that then.
It's going to take ages, I think, to figure that one out exactly. But it seems to be progressing better than it ever has before.
That's right, Kiwana. No talk about the internet's cable.
No talk about that because we don't exactly know what the story is yet. Don't know if other ISPs are going to be able to even use it. Or if there's going to be some sort of awful cartel situation.
I'm fairly sure they would probably set up some sort of joint business to sell it. Because frankly,
you would hope so.
It's a lot of capacity and they can't use it all by themselves and they can make money from selling it to other people.
And unfortunately it goes through Australia and who knows what's going to happen to it there.
Well, that's, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't, it's good but bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's another time.
30 terabits or something? How much was it? There was something.
Oh, Ryan said there was hilarity on Discourse. When did that happen?
Tonight.
Yeah. 20 minutes ago. Hilarity. Ryan's listening. He's not chatting to us. What?
I wonder what it was that happened 27 minutes ago then.
Oh, no. We'll never know.
I mean, I guess I could go back.
No, I wouldn't bother.
No, I'm not going to. Not going to bother. So I sent him a text about that domain name being available and he got it. And he said he almost had a heart attack that day. Come to find out the girl was a 12-year-old runaway. Long story short, he was arrested and the car was impounded. There was no way for him to avoid being grounded. But he got the domain.
Excellent. Good.
Do you hear that that dead air? That's me sending a text. Your eye, the chatbook. I'm going to just send that one, even though I completely fucking blew all of my thumbing on my phone keyboard.
The chatbook.
Wow, so it was a Palm app.
Apparently, according to The Guardian.
That's so funny. I wonder why it didn't occur to me that it was one of those.
The creator of the twist is demanding all profits amassed by the defendants in association with the Chubby Checker, an amount that somehow approaches $500 million, according to his lawyer's press release. As noted in response by TC Palm, one software website shows that the 99-cent app has been downloaded just 84 times.
Right.
So maybe he wants all profits that Palm have ever made, and even that sounds excessive.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine that Palm has ever earned $500 million.
I wonder when the last time was that HP earned $500 million.
Oh, now I need to make an app called Willy Wonka.
Don't forget to rewind the tape.
Willy Wonka. Willy
don't know what it does, but it's an app called Willy Wonka or the Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
The Willy Wonka.
How about Peter Dinklage? Which is a hilarious name. And
Dick
hilarious
Army.
Name.
Dick.
So we didn't really talk about the meteorite, which is absolutely incredible, and oh my god, the video.
I haven't seen a single video. when it happened, my YouTube was not working well, so I didn't bother
looking at
the time.
Oh, do you actually mean it? You're not kidding?
I haven't seen any. I started to watch one, and then the YouTube froze up, and I was like, fuck this, I'll look later, and I haven't looked.
The first one that I first saw it when Ben posted it on Twitter, at NZ Ben, former internet television radio guy, now of No Fixed Abode.
No, he's back on TV. He's doing a semi-regular thing on First Line on TV3.
I don't know what that is.
Once a month, I think, in the mornings. Right. It's their morning newsy radio, newsy breakfasty show thing.
Well, I wish him well in his continued success, whatever that show is, or if he even enjoys it.
Do I mean First Line?
Because, he came to really dislike doing breakfast before he...
Yeah, I think that was... Yeah, well, anyway.
That was all very convenient, the way that all worked out.
It did well.
So he posted a video of someone who, it was after the thing had shot through the sky, and he's just got his fucking vertically held camera, god damn it. So it's the tall, thin thing, like an idiot. Please, people, stop doing that. He's out there on the snow and, you know, wherever he is in Russia with his girlfriend and his mates, and they're looking at this thing and he's waving it around. And then finally the shockwave arrives and it's just... an absolute amazing ba-boom. I mean, 1,000 people were injured by the shockwave, right?
Apparently.
By, you know, broken glass flying around. And there are just incredible photos and videos all around the place. There, because of that weird Russian car camera, dashboard camera culture, there's lots of live video of it flying through. And it's just... Yeah, there you go. Which one's that one?
I think it's the one you're talking about. It's
scroll through to about 25, 27 seconds.
Yeah, we're getting there.
You butt. It's such a great language for swearing in. You butt.
It's a language that just always sounds fake.
And, let's be honest, a little bit drunk.
Yeah, there's.
In fact, Russia is the country that is continually proving that if you can't do it drunk, you can't do it.
Yes, that's
When's
right.
The last time they had a space shuttle explode on re-entry? Well, I mean, who knows? The theory is that they lost an awful lot of cosmonauts. All right, let's turn these pipes off, shall we?
Goodbye.
Fish and chips.
Sorry,
and chips.
The show is cancelled. Beep.